Hey, in this episode of Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks, Coffee Lakes are a-flowing. We'll be traversing Hades Canyon. We'll have ThinkPads in HDR, seriously supercomputers, and details of our awesome AMD gaming rig giveaway. Next. Welcome back to another episode of the show we affectionately call Hot Hardware's 2.5 Geeks. 2.5 Geeks if you want to do it short, and because shorthand's important sometimes. You must be efficient. I'm Dave Altavilla. Thanks for joining us. And with me, as always, Marco Cipetta and Chris this time. We sometimes have Paul. We sometimes have Chris. Chris Getting, also a geek from the Hot Hardware team. Gentlemen, happy Wednesday. It is the official hump day, 5:30 hour. Chris is drinking scotch. What's the vibe like in Maine, buddy?
Was it whiskey? Cold and rainy right now. Scotch, whiskey, whatever you want to call it. But yes, this is some Scottish, so it would be scotch.
Ah, aye. If it's not made in Scotland, it's crap. Well, that's good. It's good. You know, you got to lubricate. It's important. And we were just talking about this. We should probably have cocktail hour because it is 5:30, you know. Some folks on the East Coast now have at least punched their time cards and are now kicking into wind down mode. So that's important. Marco, are you winding down the day in Connecticut?
I am sort of winding down the day. I don't have scotch. I have water in a plastic cup. Not as exciting. But I have a nephew coming over to fix a PC right after this. And I'll have
fixing
a nice
dinner.
Fixing your PC? No, but one of his PCs. Need somewhere. We just built a new PC and it's not working out, so we're going to swap some parts and see what happens.
Nice. Excellent. So when's he coming over?
As soon as this is over. I told him be here after 6:30.
I am tweeting and messaging folks to say come join us. Hit that subscribe button so you can get notified, and if you have questions, fire them off in the chat, and we'll be efficient here, move along so that Marco can get to the geekdom that he does so well with computers and stuff. For all the family and friends, are you like the family technician? You can't get away from it. If something breaks, it's your fault and you must be called.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
Took the totally words right out of my mouth. That.
Yeah. Well, you're a net admin dude or a sysadmin. You can't get away from it ever, even in the day job.
But not,
so.
Not just here. I also cover for my dad's business out in California remotely. So it keeps me busy.
Never a dull moment. Never a dull moment here in tech. And lots going on this week. I was actually out in sunny San Jose. Do you know the way to San Jose? Apparently the plane did. It got me out there and I met with the folks at NVIDIA. We'll be talking about some stuff from them, supercomputers powered by their stuff. No shortage of things to report on and stuff to test. Marco and I are feverishly grinding away on new hardware, which we'll get to some of during the podcast here. But probably the most prominent headline this week, Intel unleashes a salvo of Coffee Lake 8th Gen Core laptop and desktop chips, Core i9 mobile CPUs, and 300 series chipsets for the platform for the desktop side. The Core i9 mobile is the first 6-core in a laptop form factor. Marco, impressive stuff from the folks at Intel, Chipzilla, affectionately known as Chipzilla, huh?
So much stuff, but not just those chips. It was sort of a low-key announcement. You know, we had a quick little briefing and the release went out, but there was a ton of stuff that Intel announced. So we have the Core i9 6-core mobile chip that Dave just mentioned. We also have a new performance mode in that chip. It's called Intel Thermal Velocity Boost. So which basically, as long as there's thermal headroom in that chip, it'll boost higher longer for even more performance. New 300 series chipsets, 4 different chipsets with enhanced I/O and updated audio. They also have USB 3.1 Gen 2 support built in. New Optane memory solutions for laptops, not just on the desktops. Optane can now also accelerate a secondary drive, which is a cool new feature. So if you have a huge, fast NVMe SSD for your OS already, but a big hard drive, say for your Steam library, you can throw an Optane drive in and accelerate your hard drive without affecting your OS drive. So lots of crazy stuff. And they also have a new line of mobile chips with Iris Plus graphics. Now, if you remember back to Broadwell, specifically on the desktop, there were mobile chips too, but on the desktop, there was the Core i7-5775, which had eDRAM cache on the die. So the graphics had access to a fast eDRAM cache. That's back in these new mobile chips with Iris Plus graphics. So a whole bunch of stuff going on here.
Wow. Yeah, geez, I guess. What's most prominent for you? I mean, holy mackerel, let's pick a target and shoot at it. For me, I think what was impressive was the new SKUs that are available for notebooks. And there was some lower power stuff for desktops, as you noted. And certainly all that Optane goodness for super fast, low latency IO throughput. Man, that was deep. But bigger, faster processors that also, you know, chill out and sip power when they need to, and then kick into high gear when you need them to crunch, right? What was your favorite flavor of Intel announcement, I guess?
So the two things that I think are super interesting, like if you just step back for a second, Intel now has super fast, high speed, true 6-core processors for mobile. You know, I can't read the slide clearly. Core i9-8950K, I think, so yeah, 8950HK. Yeah. They also have some Xeon branded mobile parts that are 6 cores, 12 thread, and only 45 watt thermal design power in a notebook. I mean, that's a ton of performance. That's more performance than last year's high-end mainstream desktop. So, you know, it's crazy. So that's pretty awesome. I'm also really intrigued by these new chips with the Iris Pro graphics. So that eDRAM cache, it accelerates graphics, but it could be used for other stuff as well. Anybody that saw the performance of the 5775 a couple of years ago saw how well it did with certain workloads and how snappy of a chip it was for, you know, everyday computing. That should be pretty great in these notebooks. I'm looking forward to testing one of those out. You know, definitely looking forward to checking that stuff out. Now, on the desktop, as Dave mentioned, I kind of glossed over. I didn't really burn through the SKUs, but there's new 8th-gen core desktop processors as well that are lower power. So if you're looking to build a nice, quiet, low power, but still plenty fast, you know, you have there's 6-core parts in here too. What's the wattage? A 35 watt 6-core desktop processor. That's crazy. Core i7-8700T. Yeah. So just so much new stuff that Intel just kind of threw it at us and said, hey, look at all the stuff we got coming.
What is your take on this? I mean, Intel is absolutely firing on all cylinders. They've got some pretty aggressive market strategies, go-to-market strategies in other areas where, you know, you would say are non-traditional for Intel, areas of like, you know, that are new and burgeoning for the market, like IoT, like, you know, drones, like AI and machine learning with their Nervana stuff. But they're still what I think this feels like to me, it feels like they're firing and executing on the CPU side harder than ever. And I think that's maybe a little bit of a hat tip and a thank you to the folks at AMD that are giving them chase, right?
I think some of it is that. I also think some of it is Intel realizing getting into all these other different low margin markets may not have been a great idea. And now they're refocused on core competency. Let's make the PC and the chips inside the PC awesome. And that'll permeate outwards instead of trying to stick their fingers in everything and all this little stuff that's out there. We also have some upcoming parts from AMD. So this is also them making some noise before that happens. Now, some of these low power desktop parts are interesting because you might have, we haven't tested it, so I'm completely speculating, but let's say the 8700T 35 watt 6-core processor. Let's say that competes with I might not even be allowed to say it, so I'm not going to say it, but the 6-core Ryzen processor, let's say it competes with that at half the power. That's a compelling story also. So it's just lots of stuff out here to digest.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think it's impressive what Intel's been bringing to the market lately. One of the things we should note that wasn't quite frankly, because I talked to the Intel team before launch and about this under NDA as you did, but we expected them to be a little bit more prominent about this because frankly, it's sort of the 800 pound gorilla or the elephant in the room. That's maybe the better euphemism, the elephant in the room. You get my zoo animals right. Is the fact that the performance claims they've made for example, in the notebook space where now we've got quad cores and six cores, and the gains that are associated with those new chips are post patch, are post meltdown and Spectra, right? So folks are thinking, yeah, Intel's throwing all this great stuff at the market, but what's the real performance numbers? Let's make sure we underscore that, I guess. All of these are the numbers of the performance that we will show in the weeks ahead are post patch, right?
Yes. So all the stuff Intel from the last few weeks forward, all of the performance numbers Intel is quoting are post patch. And in the conversations that we had with Intel, something that I brought up that we've mentioned on the podcast before, it's very likely moving forward as other mitigation strategies are implemented that the performance impact that has been shown might be lessened going forward. But right now the numbers are the numbers and they're still strong. You know, they had to adjust, they had to pivot, they had to fix some stuff, but these are still super fast processors. So it is what it is.
Yeah. Chris, are you jonesing for a 6-core laptop or is that not your kind of jam?
Well, I like the super efficient ultrabook side of the notebook game, but whenever we can add more cores and more performance on the desktop side, that's where I really like to see the power.
Yeah. I think it's impressive what we're getting into, 4 and 5 pound notebook footprints. You know, certainly, you know, you're not going to see these and you'll see quad cores in 2.5 to 3 pound ultrabooks, thin and lights, mm-hmm. ultra lights. But when you talk about the average 15-inch machine now, that's not a huge boat anchor laptop like a gaming notebook, being able to support. One of the machines that came out, actually, which is sounding fantastic, is the XPS 15 from Dell was announced. And that's going to have that 6-core Core i9 variant in an available SKU, along with a GeForce GTX 1050 Ti discrete graphics upgrade from the 1050 that's currently in it. So a little bit of a kick on the GPU side and then two more cores on the CPU side. When you think about a notebook like the XPS 15, a beautiful 15-inch machine that's not all that, it's not that big. It's more like in a 14-inch footprint, being able to mm-hmm. support a 6-core processor. That's kind of cool.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, you rock an XPS 13, right, Chris?
Yeah, but I'm still back on Broadwell, so I'm definitely due for improvements there.
You just need to do some more reviews. You'll get some notebooks in. Actually, we have to send them back, unfortunately. That's what most people don't understand is that.
But it's like pre-shopping. You get a test drive. And then when you do purchase, get a nice idea of what you're looking for, which we try to translate to in our articles.
Yeah, exactly. That is the ultimate goal is, in addition to, evaluating this product and giving a recommendation for it, hopefully you're coming to places like Hot Hardware for a buying decision, and we help you make that intelligently based on your specific usage model, which everybody's mm-hmm. a little different. Everybody's a little different. Different strokes for different folks. All right, let's talk about something else that's way different than this.
Hold on. All right. Super fast. Yeah. I mentioned the new chipsets. I have a sneak peek of a Gigabyte motherboard posted.
Oh, I forgot that.
Featuring the H370N chipset. Still working through a couple of configuration things. I should have a full review up as soon as I work through that. But 4 new chipsets came down the pipeline. The H370 is the high-end one. There's the H310, the Q370, and the B360. The B360 is a consumer / corporate. Q370 is a corporate chipset. It has, the trusted platform stuff sort of built in. But come by the site, check out the preview. I have the breakdown of the chipsets there and some really nice pictures of the motherboard and the BIOS. Full review is coming soon.
Cool. Thank you for prompting that. I've failed. I'm fired. Trump me or something because I didn't do my job there.
I'll do the Cobra. No, you're fired. You're fired.
Yeah, I should only be so lucky. Yeah, dang it. Well, no, that's good stuff. We will have a forthcoming coverage of all of these things Intel in the weeks ahead. So make sure you swing on by, we will have that coverage up. Marco is, like I said, losing sleep at a blinding pace with all this hardware into test. All right, so yeah, let's talk about things with respect to processing at a higher level. NVIDIA unveils beastly 2 petaflop DGX2 AI supercomputer with 32 gigabyte Tesla V100s and a new NV switch technology. John, I don't know if you can get that beast up on the screen, but it is impressive to see incarnate. That's the CPU. If you scroll down the bottom there, John, we will see the, I think down the bottom, we've got pictures of the actual rack. Yeah, there it is right there. That is an absolute beast of a machine. That is the DGX2 NVIDIA AI supercomputer, is a follow-on to the DGX1. And Chris, we know a little bit about this machine. It's got a couple of new parts. One's an amped up GPU. We've also got a switch technology here that I think is more the special sauce than anything else, right?
Yeah, so the new hardware here, they've bumped it up as well to 32 gigs of HBM2 memory right on board. So super fast access for all the data it needs to crunch right there. So it's an improvement. The previous generation Tesla was just 16 gigs, which is a healthy amount, but the researchers and data scientists and everyone working on these is really screaming for more memory and faster memory. That's before we even get to the cores and everything else inside the GPU itself. So as far as the DGX2 goes, it's employing, the dual 28 core Xeon processors and up to 16 GPUs inside of that. So the processing power you can get from one of these units is just, I don't really even know how to comprehend it. it's pretty nuts.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. It's something that is way outside the realm for most folks. But if you're a technologist and an enthusiast like we all are, with the product and with the hardware that's out in the market, this kind of stuff is interesting. This is a machine learning supercomputer that NVIDIA has put together to seed developers on its platform and to enable the cloud with additional CPU and GPU, not CPU, mostly GPU, excuse me, compute resources for machine learning and AI. And the hook with this machine, as you noted, Chris, is that, yeah, you've got these 32 gig memory pools now on each GPU, 32 gigs of memory versus 16, doubling that. But now you've also doubled the number of GPUs inside the cabinet and inside this big rack. And they've done this with a unique way. It's a technology called NV switch, which is a follow-on to NV link from NVIDIA, which is their previous switch technology, that serial link technology that links up to, it used to link up to 8 of these Tesla V100 Volta based GPUs. This is a Volta GPU architecture. Now it can link twice that amount, 16. And the reason it's unique is because it's a serial switch topology that now all GPUs can talk to each other and share each other's memory. So it's one big contiguous memory space and brain, really.
And network. It's fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Five times faster than the fastest PCI Express switch.
Yeah, the chip itself. Yeah, okay. So yeah, that's exactly. I think I was talking to the guys at Intel, and we actually had an impromptu meeting while I was out there. And that's what they're working on, like on the Nirvana side. You know, they're working on their core technology as well. But the one of the architects I was talking to was saying that's kind of the name of the game. System architecture is huge. It's not just, you know, build that big gorilla GPU, you know, processing brain, whatever the technology is at the processor level. The whole mm-hmm. rack's got to support scale. And so it's like, you know, these companies that are, you know, like NVIDIA and Intel are actually beginning to realize that now that, you know, if you have a big fast engine, you need big highways to run it on.
Right. And so, the more you can scale, the more you can break it up across different virtualization systems, the more you can leverage every little bit of it, because you get different projects going at once as well. And really eke out every little bit of performance from that system you can to maximize your dollar return in your research or processing, whatever you're trying to do with it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool to see this stuff. I think what most folks, you know, when you look at this machine, even if you're an enthusiast, it's like, okay, what's the application? But really, it runs the gamut. I think one of the demos they did on stage was, it was actually machine learning on the GPU versus machine learning on the CPU. And they did this, what they call inference processing example, where they took multiple, they had this series of thousands of pictures of flowers, you know, and different genus and species types of flowers. And, you know, I'm not going to go back to my horticulture roots because I have none. Hey, there's a pun, roots, horticulture, get it? you could see that the CPU was recognizing them. There's an iris, there's an orchid, there's a daisy, you know, at a certain pace. And then they flipped on the GPU and it was like, you know, 100 across, 8 rows deep. And the thing is just panning through them like nothing and getting, you know, recognizing the image, interpreting what it was, inferring what it is, at a much faster rate, because they do that parallel processing thing so well. Yeah, unbelievable. Cool stuff.
Is actually a workload that I have looked for on my phone before, trying to take a picture of a plant to see if I can identify what it is, but couldn't find anything at the time. But maybe we're close.
Really?
Bixby really? Does it now in the Galaxy S9.
Does it? What back end are they using for that?
We were taking pictures of food, and it was telling us the food and the calorie counts. It was pretty cool.
It was telling you calorie counts too? I didn't see that.
Wow. Yeah, well, I mean, it had the data there for that, sure.
Huh, interesting. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Going off database, or is it judging portion size through a scale or some way?
No, I mean, it was just a rough estimate. So, like, they had food out on a bar. And if you pointed Bixby at the foods, it would tell you what the food is and then give you, you know, the nutritional information if you wanted it.
Nice.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I remember that. And I was kind of like, it didn't really sink in at the time, but that's kind of impressive that I didn't realize it was given the nutritional information. But yeah, that's in a smartphone, which is
So that's something wild. You can build your own app out, get a cloud account with one of these NVIDIA setups to power all your image recognition or whatever you're looking for, and make yourself some money.
There you go. Oh, that's so it's impressive stuff to see. And the folks at NVIDIA are really, you know, they're sort of mopping up in the market with this thing. They're clearly a leader in the machine learning space with their GPU architecture. They did it way back when by enabling developers and even college students, you know, researchers at the college level, with this thing called CUDA, which was their API for GPU compute, for computing on the GPU. And they seeded the market with that thing so well that, you know, they're sort of the de facto now in machine learning on the GPU, which is a big chunk of the current market. But yeah, it'd be interesting to watch how this thing pans out, because there's a lot of players coming into play now. You got Google with Tensor Cores and the Tensor processor. You've got Microsoft with its work with FPGAs. You know, the Skynet's coming, right, Marco? You're not afraid of Skynet, right?
Oh, I am. We're dead meat. I'm totally afraid of Skynet. Then again, it's got to be doing me a favor, taking me off of this friggin' blue marble.
That's before we get to all the quantum computer developments that have been coming out.
Exactly.
50-something qubits and probably more. It's been a while since I've looked.
I don't know.
Was it Google or IBM, that most recent news? I don't even remember.
I think it was IBM that came out with a 16-qubit processor, which doesn't sound like a lot, but in quantum it is. And when you gang those together, I don't know. that is the computing that defies. I mean, you think, and we won't stay on this track too long, but quantum computing. So it's based on a qubit, which in the fundamental element is a one, a zero, or both. How does that work?
You know, 72 qubits from Google. I'm gonna get over the link.
It's not a processor. That's the machine, right? The whole machine.
Says it's the chip. I haven't actually read this one. I just saw headline. I'm sorry.
Holy mackerel.
Square Schrodinger's of 72 cat. Qubits.
Wow. So Schrodinger's cat, right? Mm-hmm. You know the concept of Schrodinger's cat? That's like part of it. It's so nuts. Is the cat alive or dead? Or it could be either in the box.
It's either
until you open it.
It's either until you open it, right? Yeah, that's. Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating stuff, but it's a little crazy.
It's a lot crazy.
It is. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a little freaky. It defies logic, but it's not traditional logic. It's quantum logic. So yeah. Anyways, let's move on to something a little bit more traditional. And actually, Marco, I'm going to jump out of order because you're talking, I got to go fetch a product to show the folks while you're talking about the Intel Hades Canyon nut. Is it a walnut? Hades Canyon nuck.
Oh yeah. Hold back a dirty joke.
Don't go there, baby. Don't go there. Did, yeah. The next unit of computing is what nuck, NUC, stands for.
We're never going to get another one for Ripper now.
Yeah, I know. We're doomed.
You mean this guy right here? This thing is so sexy.
Tell us about that. What's special about it under the hood and all that? I'll be right back.
Okay, so I really, really, really dig this machine. This is, so I'll get the model number out first. The code name is Hades Canyon. This is the NUC 8i7HVK. This is the high-end Hades Canyon NUC. Now, there's a few reasons this machine is special. First is the form factor. This is a pretty capable 1080p gaming machine that fits in my hands right here. So for a NUC machine, for something this small, you see a ton of I/O on the front, a ton of I/O on the back, including, you know, dual gigabit LANs, plenty of USB. This thing can do, I believe it's 6 or 4 monitors, but either way, a ton of connectivity on this machine. But what makes it really special is this is the first NUC to feature a Core i7 8809G. That is one of the new Kaby Lake G processors with the Radeon RX Vega graphics core on the same package as the CPU. The CPU and GPU are connected through an EMIB. I'm forgetting what EMIB stands for, but basically
multi-die interconnect.
That's it. I don't have it in front of me. That's awesome stuff. So you end up with, you know, this fast quad-core processor with Radeon Vega graphics in this super slim form factor. Now, this brand type of chip will also be in notebooks, in Ultrabooks. It's in the XPS 15 2-in-1 that we recently reviewed. Now, looking through the numbers, here's what makes it special. Fastest NUC by far, but and it even competes with some full-size desktops in terms of CPU performance. Fastest NUC by far, like in a completely different class. If you look at, technically this is on-processor graphics. So if you look at graphics performance versus other on-processor graphics, it's just in a completely other league. You see a little graphs and this big long graph for Hades Canyon versus full-size desktop GPUs. Performance is about in line, a little better than 1050 Ti, not quite as good as like an RX 470, but still in this low power, slim form factor. So super powerful, gorgeous, full featured NUC. Another cool feature, customizable lighting on here. So there's a skull on the top that lights up. You have control over the lighting on all of the LEDs, not just the skull on top. The only drawback, well, two drawbacks. One is one of them is on the screen. The power brick, which is in that picture that is being shown, is almost the size of the computer itself.
And oh, wow,
is,
yeah.
Is pricing. So the bare bones unit is $1,000 for this high-end one. Throw in memory and storage and an OS, a few hundred dollars more. There's clearly a price premium over building your own full-size desktop, but there is no way you could build anything this big, this fast, this cool. It's just a really awesome little machine.
Well, no, I mean, that's about the size of one of those, the old CD players that we used to stick in our computers before USB drives took over everything.
So I almost dated myself when writing the article. This is about the size of a VHS cassette case.
Yeah, it's not dating yourself that bad, though. I mean, I think
so. Here's the machine. Here's a Galaxy Note 8. Right?
Yeah, that's amazing. Hey, John, I tossed a link in the chat. If you can pull that up, it's a link to the chip. Some coverage we have on the actual chip, 8th generation Core processor with AMD Radeon RX Vega M graphics. I don't know if you can see that. But that's what's remarkable about this thing is the processor on board, right? It's remarkable in a number of ways. It offers that kind of performance. There it is right there. There's the chip itself. That is the Kaby Lake G, the code name Kaby Lake G. Intel processor on the right in that image, GPU and associated HBM, 4 gig of HBM2 memory on the left. And what's impressive is that it is a collaboration between arch rivals, Intel and AMD. You know, it's like it offers some pretty breakout performance in that kind of form factor, but it's also indicative of a collection we never thought. It's like hell froze over, right?
You know, when you step back and think about it, now that we're further removed from the original announcement, this makes a ton of sense. NVIDIA is simply kicking ass, right? NVIDIA is just rocking lately. They can't be touched in the high-end GPU space. They're killing it in the data center. They're you know, all this stuff is further out because of just how you know product cycles work in automotive. But the self-driving car stuff, they're looks like they're killing it there. NVIDIA is just is rocking. They're a juggernaut right now. So Intel needed or wanted killer graphics. So they turned to the enemy of NVIDIA, who's also happens to be their enemy on some other fronts. But this deal now, every time Intel sells one of these NUCs, other machines, other notebooks that are going to have these Kaby Lake G chips in it, AMD makes going to make some money. AMD selling a graphics core now with that. That's great for AMD.
Right.
This implementation in this first thing we looked at is great for Intel. So this is a cool part. And now step further back, I'm sure Intel can throw whatever GPU they want on there with that EMIB. Doesn't have to be Vega. If they, you know, Raja, formerly of the, you know, Radeon Technology Group, is at Intel now, specifically said they're going to be working on discrete GPUs. It's entirely possible this is just laying the groundwork for, you know, an Intel discrete GPU. And then they can sort of have this one processor core and scale graphics up and down and just connect them through that EMIB. So,
yeah.
This is a really cool development, but for right now, it's good for both of them, and it is a really cool implementation. Like I'm looking at the Firestrike benchmark just as a quick example. You have a chart for Firestrike. The next closest integrated graphic solution, the Vega 11 in Raven Ridge, is less. It's like 40% as fast. It's not even close.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Like this thing. And then if you look at power now, so this machine is, it's not super low power. It comes with a 200 watt or maybe a 230 watt power supply. I don't remember exactly, but idles 14 watts. When you're whacking the CPU, just like with a regular single core workload, 39 watts. All cores in the CPU hit is only 81 watts for the whole system. And if you're gaming, hitting the CPU and GPU, 139 watts, right? That's less than just a single GPU in the desktop system. This is a really cool setup.
Yeah. Cool stuff. And yet you make a good point that that interconnect is kind of one of the special sauces. If you think about the evolution of technology here, we've gone from a CPU and a socket, GPU and a PCI Express slot, to everything on chip, like, you know, no joke, everything on a single chip that's this big, you know, that big in my hand, a couple of inches across, a couple inches high, and or an inch high rather, and that embedded multi-die interconnect bridge, that's what EMIB stands for, it allows these things to talk to these two CPU and GPU almost to talk on package. You're not talking across a PCB and long traces now. It's that close proximity wise. So the latency is super, super low. Everything's just right there. And so there's a certain amount of efficiency.
Without the interposer, you know, without an interposer and in low profile, you know, I didn't mention there's also HBM2 with that GPU on here. It's got 4 gigs of dedicated HBM2. This is a really highly integrated, very cool chip that Intel and AMD pulled off.
Yeah, it's sort of an engineering, prowess example for Intel and probably AMD, but there's some serious package engineering going on there. Like, no joke, to make that thing in volume and do what they did with it. I mean, that's where the mojo is. That thing's freaking cool. It's a cool chip. Now that we've seen it, and yeah, like you say, now that we've got a chance to play with it, when we first heard it, we were like, why would they do that? You know, that was our reaction, right, Marco? But, you know, because it seemed unnatural to arch rivals working together. But no, not so much.
So we actually have a question about this in the chat. Joe is asking, I see Apple Kaby Lake G. I think he's asking if we'll see a MacBook Kaby Lake G machine, given that Apple hasn't been using NVIDIA. I don't know. I would not be surprised if a version of this tech ended up in a MacBook because, you know, AMD Apple is favorable to AMD graphics. And for now, they are still using Intel processors. So we'll see. Considering how long it took to update the MacBooks recently, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon because the new ones kind of just came out. So.
Right. Well, that said, Apple has made a bit of a promise to be better about their Pro line as far as updating hardware goes. So hopefully that means that we'll see quicker iterations on the hardware side. But it is Apple, so I'll believe it when I see it.
Oh boy, hope nobody from Apple's watching. We're gonna get some daggers. Yeah, no, and actually Apple's working on their own silicon these days pretty hard, so we'll have to see how that all pans out. But yeah, what's unique about this chip is the form factors it enables, and as Marco, you pointed out, with that NUC, it's just this tiny little thing. It other applications, obviously, you could see all-in-ones being a natural fit for this, the all-in-one PC. So whether that be, you know, something from Dell or HP or one of those guys, or Apple in an iMac. I have a machine that also employs the technology right here with me, and this is Dell's XPS 15 2-in-1. And this is why I jumped around, because I wanted to go fetch this little guy from the studio behind me. It is a 15-inch convertible Ultrabook. I'm going to try and get it more in the frame. Okay, yeah, there we go. And as you can see, folds back into tablet mode. Okay, you're talking a little over 4 pounds. I think I want to say it's like 4.2 pounds. Beautiful setup, right? Brushed aluminum lid, nice and thin and light. I mean, if you like a 15-inch form factor, this is about as thin and light as it gets without compromising structural integrity. And so you got machined aluminum, nice chamfered edges all around. And then, of course, the palm rest is built with Dell's carbon fiber construction, which feels great and looks great on the palm rest area. So the XPS signature design that we all know and love. They have the new Kaby Lake G processor inside this now. So now you've got that NUC-like performance, you know, that powerful mini desktop like performance in this laptop 4-pound laptop. And they've also built some thermal solution in here, a dual heat pipe thermal solution that does a really good job of maintaining performance over time and managing the thermals of that chip on board this laptop. So it's actually the fastest 15-inch machine we've tested to date with, I should say, a 15-inch 2-in-1, a convertible that we've tested to date. It's really impressive. It's basically GeForce GTX 1050 Ti performance and a four pound and change 2-in-1 laptop. The display is also awesome too. They amped the display up to a 400 nits brightness. This is the 4K. It's IGZO technology with 400 nits of brightness panel. So it's beautiful. It's a beautiful panel. Really can't say enough. Impressive machine. The only thing that's a little bit of a hold back on this is battery life with the 4K panel, because you're lighting up all those pixels plus that powerful chip. It's not bad. I mean, you're sort of middling battery life versus other sort of 15-inch, you know, fuller featured machines. It's you know, right in the middle of the pack. But I think the 1080p display would be maybe a better option if you're concerned with battery life. But performance on the thing is just crazy for its form factor. What did you guys think about that thing? Did you take a look at it? Marco, I know you've seen it. Chris, what do you think? I know you're an XPS line fan.
Yeah, I think that's the model that I saw when I was at PAX. Correct me if I'm wrong. Or is at least very similar to that. And it was great to work with, and beautiful panel on it. That is the really hard decision. Do you go with the 1080p or go with the 4K? Everything practical says stick with 1080p, because Windows scaling is still not fantastic. So you can get some apps that are just going to be microscopic on the screen. You know, the battery life is a huge consideration, especially when a lot of the purpose of an ultrabook is to be an all-day machine out on the go. So that is a drawback, but it's so gorgeous that you can't help but want 4K to work.
Yeah, and actually Joe asked in the chat, let's go ahead and paste the link. Yes, the full review is up, swing on by. He's asking 4K Adobe colors. Yeah, so the 4K panel supports 100% of the Adobe RGB color gamut. There's the specs. And the 1080p panel supports 100% sRGB, not Adobe RGB. So,
and I'll interject that on the color space, yeah, because there is a lot of confusion for people. If you're doing photography, you actually want to be working in the sRGB color space, because if you're doing any print or sending it to the web, so many computers and devices still don't support full Adobe color space, that you can end up with either the web interpreting your colors wrong or other issues. So when you're doing the photo editing or video editing, you really want to be in the right color space for what you're doing. So sRGB is far from a bad thing. It is still the standard. And it's just a matter of how rich your colors are going to be when you have that special Adobe RGB content.
Right. Cool stuff. And actually, to talk about color space and lighting and image quality, the cameras you're viewing us through, by the way, brought to you by Logitech. You're looking at the podcast.
Nice via
three, right. This is actually a sponsored plug. They sort of sponsored the podcast, sent over three cameras and said, hey, take a look at these and go ahead and cast away over them. The Logitech C922 Pro Stream webcam, and it is designed for streaming and casting, and that's what we're doing on all of these. So good stuff from the 60 folks.
60 FPS, 1080p.
Yes. All that. All the P's.
Yeah. It's better with low light than the 920 I was using, so that's always handy. Don't need to use quite as much light.
Yeah, that was my observation, was the lighting was way better, backlighting like you see here in my studio. And in my office. Yeah, it's a little bit better on that for sure. Marco, he looks good in any light, so bastard.
Just look how pretty. Just look at this. Look at this. This is unreal.
Lifetime of hard work.
Yeah. It's a 10 miles of bad road, a lifetime of hard work. I don't know which. You know, no.
The funny part, in real life, I look like Gollum. This is a total camera. This is all
the camera. Oh, right. It's camera magic. Yeah. It's all we're about here is smoke and mirrors. You should know that. Yeah. Oh, goodness. All right. So, yeah, let's move along a little bit more on that note. And I'll mention something I've been taking a look at, or I actually did a review on as well. Not based on the Kaby Lake G processor. This is based on 8th gen processor technology from Intel, just standard integrated Core i7 stuff. This is the Lenovo ThinkPad X1 Carbon, and it is, let me see if I can fire it up for you. It is, you can see backlit keyboard. It is new for 2018. This is the 6th gen version. This is your basic super light. This is a 2.5 pound machine. It is not even 3. There we go. I'll spin back here, get a little bit more. Yeah, there you go. Laptop on display. So, and what's unique about this, I think, is one of the reasons why I use these machines. I use the ThinkPad X1 line, the Carbon or the Yoga. This is the Carbon because I really like the keyboards. The keyboards are just super workhorse. Some of the best keyboards in the notebook business right here. And but this machine, amped up with 8th gen Core technology now, so that's a nice upgrade. But the other thing they did, which sort of blew my mind, because I didn't think anything could compete with OLED after being spoiled by OLED notebooks. I saw a couple of those. Lenovo has one. And then the Alienware line from Dell has a 13-inch notebook. This has an HDR display. This is a 14-inch, 2560 by 1440. Keep shutting off on me. 2560 by 1440 resolution HDR panel. The technology is TPLS something polystyrene. It's not. It's a different type of LCD. It is non-touch, and but it's 2560 by 1440 res. Yeah, LTPS, 500 nits of brightness, HDR capable, and it is actually impressive to see side by side versus OLED. Like if you're dead nuts right on, and if you hit the review, you can see I've got some AB shots versus Lenovo's ThinkPad X1 Yoga from last year that has an OLED display. I thought one of the best notebook displays in the business at the time. This thing actually competes. It's standard LCD, so you don't have the concern for OLED burn-in with it. Side by side, it's almost OLED, just has it by a hair with slightly deeper blacks. When you get off on a viewing angle, though, actually this display holds up a little bit better. It's a little bit brighter, and it holds the image a little bit better. You get a little bit more washout on the OLED panel, believe it or not. And so, yeah, there you go. There's a couple of images that show that AB in the foreground and the background, and the smaller X1 Carbon with HDR display is the machine you to look at there. That's the smaller one that I have with me, the X1 Carbon. And so, yeah, impressive stuff. And when you fire up HDR content, and I hopped on YouTube and pulled up some HDR movie trailers, it makes a significant difference versus OLED. Like, you see the range, especially in lighting, you know, big range of lighting scenes where you've got dark areas, lots of color, bright areas. You can see a difference even on an OLED panel. You think OLED would hold up pretty well to HDR, and it does versus a standard panel, but not compared to this thing. It's actually kind of impressive how it performs. The other thing that's coming online isn't available yet. It's HDR compliant, so HDR10, which is an open source HDR specification that folks follow, from content creators to, you know, hardware folks. Dolby Vision is sort of a step up from that, and it will have Dolby Vision capability later on this year. I want to say actually maybe later this month. Wasn't available for when I tested it. And Dolby Vision gives you a little bit more information per scene on the color space. So it allows better tuning per scene, not just the entire movie of HDR rendering. So per scene HDR rendering versus the entire film. And that's supposedly, I haven't seen the difference. It's going to increase fidelity when that capability is available. And a lot of producers, I'm told, movie producers, content producers, work in both because it's a subset of HDR10 or a superset of HDR10. And it's not that hard to do, to just render for both. So yeah, kind of cool. The ThinkPad X1 Carbon, Lenovo surprised us a little on the pricey side. I'll have to look up what our configuration was. I believe it starts at $1,299.
Yeah. The configuration was about $2,500.
We had a terabyte NVMe SSD in there. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it starts at, I'm sorry, $1,500. So it's definitely a premium laptop. Starts at $1,500. We tested $2,500. Yeah, as tested. But with a 1 terabyte SSD, 16 gig of RAM, and that HDR panel, I would say the panel, go for it. And especially in a 14-inch form factor, that 1440p is kind of perfect. What do you think, Marco? Mm-hmm. Is this your kind of jam?
That machine's awesome. I got to see it live at CES and experience that screen as well. We all know Lenovo makes killer notebooks, just good stuff all around. So couple the Lenovo build quality in that machine with that really cool screen. And yeah, I'm all about that thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a good machine. We're getting a lot of really good, like what's impressive now is that notebooks that are coming to market, and we've got to start, you know, we got to look a little bit more at Acer. I've got some good stuff. HP, we're going to be looking at the Spectre X360, also with the Kaby Lake G. That's going to be coming in shortly as well. Really impressive, the horsepower you get in notebooks these days, and the build quality and the materials and workmanship. Certainly, the price has gone up, and you know we can all back down to 1080p displays, and you know maybe get a smaller SSD to curb that price, but what's available, the range of options, what you can do in a laptop these days versus, you know, even a couple of years ago is kind of blows my mind. It's impressive stuff. It's fun for us guys, right? We got a lot of toys to play with in the test bench.
The premium notebooks are definitely more premium these days than they've ever been. And as much as I hate to admit it, we probably have Apple's trend setting to thank for that with their MacBook Pros. But the PCs are definitely doing it better. Apple got the price up there. Now PCs are bringing the quality.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. You know, Apple brought the quality first, and I mean, you have to hand it to them back in the day. You know, they really sort of set the bar, and now others in the PC world are setting the bar, not only from a materials and workmanship standpoint, but from a usability and features and all that good stuff, such that, I mean, frankly, the Apple stuff is kind of, you know, I don't know. I'm a Windows guy, so maybe I'm biased a little bit, but I don't think there's anything Apple has from a hardware standpoint that, you know, the PC realm can't compete with on almost every level. OS aside, I mean, if you're a Mac
Apple
user,
ecosystem is very, very nicely integrated. I will give them that. Right. I just still can't wrap my head around the MacBook that came out that was thinner than the MacBook Air and has like nothing inside from a system support perspective or horsepower or anything else. And they were still charging over $1,000 for that.
Yeah, no, it's a premium sell for sure with Apple. That is the way they go to market, and they'll make no bones about it. They're not looking to slog it out in the low margin set. But it'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, one of the headlines we talked about, and we'll sort of wrap up on this. Marco, you've got something to tell us too as well on things you're going to be giving away. But a sign of the times for Apple is they are now not only trying to compete for a high margin business, but they're trying to compete to capture more margin on the cost side of things. Apple claims Apple to ditch Intel chips in Macs by 2020. Intel shares tumbled, but frankly, the market cratered this week, recovered a little bit, thankfully. But yeah, so now we're getting rumors of Intel Apple, designing processes to supplant their Intel partnership long term, to sort of bring that capability in house and own that technology, obviously squeeze a few more dollars of profit out of it too. Marco, do you think that'll ever come to pass? I know you've got some strong feelings on that.
I think in typical analyst fashion, it's probably a misinterpretation of a rumor. I think it makes sense, and it will probably happen that Apple makes its own processor for a MacBook Air, some sort of mobile MacBook type device along the lines of what we're seeing on the Windows side with the Qualcomm Snapdragon based machines. I do not see Apple completely revamping their OS and software, hoping all of the developers revamp all their OS and software, and developing a chip powerful enough to, say, go in a Mac Pro for some sort of professional content creation machine. I don't see that happening. So what I think happened is there was a rumor out there. An analyst, had an inside source, picked up on the rumor. Maybe is not quite as tech savvy as he should be, and said they're just going to ditch Intel, when it's more likely that MacBooks or Macs, whatever type of Macintosh it is, some will be powered by an Apple chip, some will be, and sort of be akin to a big blown up iPad, and where others, the powerful stuff, will be still on. Maybe not an Intel CPU, because Threadripper is pretty badass, but some sort of powerful x86 chip. Could be completely wrong. Apple has blown up their platform in the past and switched, but I just don't see it happening for the content creation crowd, which is the area that Apple makes the most money on a Mac. I mean, let's be honest, the Macintosh is the redheaded stepchild at Apple right now versus the iPhone. So I don't know. I don't see them blowing it up and starting over.
It's fascinating to think about. I recall back in the day when, Apple converted from Motorola PowerPC. Yeah, PowerPC processors, which is RISC-based versus CISC. So RISC processors, which is ARM technology, ARM is RISC architecture. Back in the day, then they converted to x86, and that was huge. That's like, man, yeah, you got source code. You're talking about, coming from a Linux, or Unix background with Mac OS and that whole, repository and years of source code on PowerPC to switch over to Intel and x86. That was so they've shifted that gear in the past. I agree with you, Marco. I think
they didn't have the market share then, I don't think.
Yeah.
They don't have it now with the Mac either. I mean,
no, but I think they've got a better foothold than they used to when they switched from PowerPC to Intel.
Right. Yeah. No, it's a fascinating dynamic. And man, I mean, technology, we've been in this gig for a while now, and it's every year we seem to get a little bit surprised by stuff, but then you learn it's like, no, it's continual. It's relentless. It just doesn't stop. The change is coming every day. and yeah, from Intel and AMD working with each other on a combined chip to, who knows, Apple designing their own someday. I mean, let's face it, their silicon prowess in handsets is impressive. A11 Bionic is no joke, right?
Yep. I don't have any real concerns with their ability to produce chips that perform. What could be interesting is seeing the security side of things, as we see with Spectre and Meltdown, how, since they would have a smaller market share of those chips specifically, how security would be addressed for those if something dramatic came up. But it looks like we're being a little pushed for time, so.
Yeah. No problem. Yeah. Let's wrap it up, Marco, real quick. Let's talk about the Raven Ridge giveaway, the Raven Ridge AMD Corsair giveaway. You got something going on. You're going to build it, right?
We got it. We got all the stuff we announced last podcast. So up for grabs, super easy to win. AMD Ryzen 5 2400G in an ASRock AB350 gaming K4 motherboard with a bunch of gorgeous and really nice Corsair peripherals and components thrown in. Corsair 750 watt PSU, a beautiful Corsair Crystal Series 570X chassis, 16 gigs of Corsair Vengeance RAM, a Corsair K70 rapid fire keyboard, and also an RGB mouse. Just really nice, fun system that we're giving away. All you have to do to win is come by the site, participate in some conversations, make some friends with some other geeks, and that is it. Maybe like a couple Facebook pages and you are entered.
There you go. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube.
All the socials. Yeah. No, that's good stuff. Thanks, Marco. Yeah. So folks from Corsair and the folks from AMD, we're giving it away. We usually give away something big every month, and this is the one we're doing this week. We decided to fire up some AMD Raven Ridge goodness inside some Corsair skins. Love it. So stop by hothardware.com, where you can find us on the web, twitter.com/hothardware, facebook.com/hothardware, youtube.com/hothardware, or hothardware vids. Hit the subscribe button and get notified when we stream, and you can join us. Would love that. Would appreciate it. And yeah, man, that's about it, right, guys?
That's it, baby.
That's it for us geeks. Thanks for stopping by.